Okay, welcome. Nice to see you all. For those who I could see, for those who are black boxes, welcome. Great to have you as well. And we have really interesting stuff to talk about tonight. This is the beginning of the three-part series on murder in the Bible. And today we are discussing the invention of murder. And let's jump right in. Nice to see you, Josh. Rabbi Gerson, welcome aboard. Jeremy, hi, how are you? Shalom Aleichem. Hi, Chaim. Hope you're well. Nice to see
Hi.
everyone. We've got a full screen. That's nice. Okay. Josh, I'm not sure if it was you, but before someone named Alicia Klapholz was trying to get in, but she was having trouble. I don't know if that was you using a different computer or whatever.
No, that was Alicia back in Houston. I'll see if I can help her.
Yeah, it's I saw like it was like I felt like my the computer trying to do its thing, but it kept saying join and then it dropped off. So you may want to do the chivalrous thing and open the virtual door for your wife. Okay. So let me share my screen and we will jump right in. Okay, hold on 1 second. Sorry. I suffer from too many tabs being open. This is a Zoom hazard. Okay, now we're getting there. Okay, so the invention of murder. So we are going to spend our time tonight talking about the episode of Cain and Hevel, when Cain kills Hevel. That probably comes as no surprise when discussing the invention of murder. It didn't take very long, right, in human history for there to be a murder. And what's interesting to right, there are only four people in the world when this murder took place. And so in relative terms, Cain killed a greater proportion of the world's population than anyone ever, or was responsible for the largest proportion of humanity being killed than any given event that has ever taken place, including wars in the world. So that's just an interesting little tidbit to think about. What is interesting to note is that at the very outset, when the rabbis talk about this murder and the invention of murder, they talk about it almost in the sense of like a trial and error. So I think you're like there's this quote, something along the lines from Benjamin Franklin when they're asking him, you know, how many times he failed in his attempt to make a light bulb, and he said, "Well, I didn't fail in my attempt to make a light bulb. I just learned all the things that don't work when you're trying to make a light bulb," something like that. So we have a similar situation in Cain, where it seemed to have taken him a little bit of time to figure out just how to kill somebody. And what we'll see that in a really interesting Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin. Before we do that, I want to just let you know if you have a question, you could or a comment, you could use the raise hand function that we have in Zoom, or if that doesn't work, you could just unmute yourself and start talking, and we'll do it that way. So the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin says something really interesting. The Gemara says the context of this Gemara is the court is getting ready to sort of cross-examine a witness to murder. And the court wants to make sure that this witness understands that their testimony is very, very serious because if their testimony is accepted, it's going to lead to the death of the defendant, right? We're talking about a situation where capital punishment, at least in theory, exists, and they want to make sure that this witness is not going to take this lightly and recognize the preciousness of each life. And so in that context, the Mishnah says as follows: Havu yodin shelo kedine mamanot dine nefashot. You should know that capital law, cases of capital law, are not like cases of monetary law. Dine mamanot adam no ten mamon umitchaper lo. In the case of a monetary law, if there's a false testimony which leads money to be given to the wrong party, the money can be recouped, right? The damage can be undone. Obviously, dine nefashot damo v'dam zer otav tulinbo ad sofa olam. But in the case of capital law, if one testifies falsely, which then leads to the wrongful capital death of someone, then the blood of the accused and the blood of the accused offspring that they did not merit to produce because they were killed are ascribed. This is the Koran translation, are ascribed to the witness's testimony until eternity. So all of those lives that could have come from the person are extinguished, and that is on the shoulders of the false witness. The Gemara then continues and says the following: Amar Rabbi Yehuda Bered Rabbi Chia. When we talk about capital cases being different, Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Chia, said, because he's wondering in the pasuk that says Kol Demei Achicha, when God confronts Cain, he says literally the bloods of your brother are calling out to me from the ground. The Torah uses the plural term for blood, demei, bloods. So what does the Gemara learn from this? Milamed shasa kayin behevel achiv chaburot, chaburot, pitziot, pitziot. Now when Cain was trying to kill Hevel, he just kept on hitting him in multiple ways, in multiple places. Why? Shelo haya yodea mehechan nishama yotzah. He didn't know, literally, this means, he didn't know from where the soul departs. But what it means for us is he didn't know how to kill somebody. He was, as we, in our title, he was inventing murder. He didn't know what to do. I'm still not sure how he knew such a thing was possible. But in any case, he didn't know how to kill him. So he just kept hitting him, right? Chaburot, chaburot, pitziot, pitziot, shelo hayayodeh mehecham nishama yotzah, ad shegil etzavaro, until he struck him in the neck, and then, I guess, Hevel died. So when thinking about the murder of Cain killing Hevel, we're going to get into what may have led to this, just the mechanics of it. The rabbis of the Talmud are interested in the mechanics of it. Like, how did he know how to do it? And the answer is he didn't really know how to do it. It was trial and error. Well, this isn't how you kill someone. This isn't how you kill someone. Ah, I finally figured it out. It's a bit of a morbid Gemara, but it does get to this this point of this was literally the first murder, and the murderer did not know what they were doing. Okay. I want to just stop. I'd like to stop after sort of each subsection and just pause and see if there are any comments or questions on what I've said so far. If there are not, we'll just go into, we'll carry on. Okay.
I had one question.
Yes, I think.
I know there were korbanot already because this is kind of what started the conflict anyway. So was there a concept of killing animals to eat them?
At this point, I don't think they were eating animals. It comes a little bit later. And if we look at the text of the Torah, let's look back and look at the text of the Karbanot, because that's an excellent question. No, this is not the text I'm looking for. Let's go back here to Genesis 4:10. Let me open up another tab here, and we'll do that. We'll go to Genesis 4 to have a look. Okay, so Genesis 4, okay, Adam and Chava, they're pregnant. Okay, so Cain brings some sort of grain or fruit offering to God. And Hevel brought the firstling of his flock. So Hevel, interesting, great point, you see. It looks like Hevel knows how to kill, assuming he killed the animal before he brought it as an offering. That's really unclear also what it means that he brought it as an offering. Did he just sort of say, here, God, this, you know, this goat is for you? Or did he kill it? It's unclear. But even if he did,
well, it says of the fats thereof. So somehow he needed to separate these things.
We'll say that again.
It says in Pasuk 4, the Bechal Bahen. Right, so somehow he needed to separate the animal from its flesh. So presumably he.
Yep.
Somehow took them apart.
He must not have passed this on to Cain. Right, so Cain was the one who killed Hevel, and so it seems like. It's a really interesting question on that Gemara. I guess. Maybe like I said, Hevel knew how to do this, but Cain did not know how to do this. In terms of how to take the life from a living being. Okay. So back to our story. We see soon after this another murder. Vayomer Lemech Linashav Ada Vitzila Shimaan Koli Mishe Lemach. Hear my voice, wives of Lemach. Ha'azena imrati, give ear to my speech. Ki ish haragti lif'itz'i, v'yeled l'chaburati. I have slain a person for wounding me, and a lad for bruising me. Ki shivatayim yukam kain v'lemach shiv'im v'shiva. If Cain is avenged sevenfold, then Lemach 77-fold. This is the second murder. And it seems here that Lemach is not embarrassed. He doesn't think he did anything wrong. Now, it may have been in self-defense, but it certainly was an intentional murder. Rabbi Chaim Navon, who's written about violence in the Torah, he's a Ram in Har Etzion, in the Gush, makes the following observation. Chazal understood that Lemach killed unintentionally. According to certain modern scholars, however, and this seems to be the plain sense of the text, Lemach sings here a song of self-praise for having successfully killed his enemies. He proclaims that the revenge that he took from his enemies is far greater than the revenge that God took for Cain. Murder is no longer a shameful sin, but an accomplishment to take pride in. So understanding what Chaim Navon is saying is... The society fell fast, right? Murder became something that was celebrated. So now let's try to understand what exactly went on between Cain and Hevel. Why did Cain kill Hevel? And the verses are unclear. Cain brought an offering of fruit. Like we saw before, he brought the choice of his firstling and the fat. Vayisha Hashem El Hevel Ve'emin Chato Ve'el Kayin Ve'emin Chato Lo Sha'a. So God paid attention to Hevel's offering, but not to Kayin's offering. Vayichayla Kayin Ma'od Vayipu Panav. Kayin was upset and his face fell. That's a figure of speech. And then God speaks to Kayin and wants to know what's wrong. And then we get to the pasuk where it becomes very uncertain what happened. Vayomer Kayin El Hevel Achiv. Kayin said to his brother Hevel, Vayihi Beotama Sadeh. And when they were in the field, Vayakam Kayin El Hevel Achiv Vayahargehu. Hevel arose, Kayin arose, and killed Hevel. That's pasuk chet, pasuk chet. Okay, so let's look at that pasuk. I guess does this pasuk raise any questions for anybody? Anyone like to comment on pasuk chet?
What did Kayin say to Hevel?
Correct. Who said that? Was that Josh?
Josh, yeah.
Josh, thank you. Yes, right. What did Kayin say to Hevel? Kayin El Hevel, Achiv. Kayin said to Hevel's brother, dot, dot, dot. We don't know. We don't have dot, dot, dots in the Torah, but that's the equivalent. We don't know what he said. And then all we know is that he got up and killed him. We don't know what was said. And that, trying to figure out what was said, takes the attention of many of the commentaries as they try to figure out the motive for Kayin killing Hevel. So let's jump into it. Let's see Rashi. Rashi says as follows: Nichnas imo b'divrei riv, umatsa lehit olel alav lahargo. He began an argument, striving and contending with him, to seek a pretext to kill him. There are other midrashic interpretations we'll get to, but this is the plain sense of the text. I'm not sure how often Rashi does this, but it doesn't feel like he does this a lot. He says there are midrashim because Rashi likes midrashim. But here Rashi goes straight to what we would call pshat. So what's Rashi saying? Anyone want to sort of reframe or rephrase what Rashi is saying? If we're going to try to use Rashi to answer the question, what did Kayin say to Hevel? Why did Kayin kill Hevel? Any takers? So it seems that what Rashi is telling us here is that sometimes someone hates someone else and they want to do them harm. And so they look for a pretext that would sort of give them the green light. Right? Right? Hevel didn't really do anything wrong to Kayin. But Kayin, Rashi says, Nichnas imo b'divrei riv umatsa lehitolel alav, lehargo. He found some reason, made up some reason, right, to kill him. But this is really interesting, right? According to Rashi, the Torah does not record the wording of the conversation because it's not important. It doesn't matter what Kayin said to Hevel. All that's important is that whatever argument Kayin initiated was simply to get them into a fight so that he could kill him. So who cares what he said? No matter what he would have said, it would have led to this result of Kayin killing Hevel. I think that's really fascinating. Such a fascinating psychological insight, right, into human nature, that sometimes you just don't like someone and you find a reason to not like them, or you find a reason to harm them, or worse in this case. And that's So that helps answer both questions. Like, why did Cain kill Hevel? Well, he was just upset with him, angry with him. Maybe again because of the karban, or let's say he was jealous of him. And also helps understand why the pasuk doesn't say anything. Because he's as I said, it did not really matter. The Ramban, Nachmanides, has a different take on this. He says, but in my opinion, it is connected with the following words of scripture. And it came to pass when they were in the field, which is the beginning of the pasuk, Vayehi biyotam basadeh, ki amar lo, netzei hasadeh, v'haragoto sham b'seter. What is Ramban introduced here in terms of how we think about murder?
Entrapment.
Entrapment. Okay, I was going to use another term, not entrapment. I was going to use premeditation. Right, the Ramban, like according to Rashi, they're out in the field, and Cain's like, this is a good opportunity, but according to the Ramban, right, he lures him out there, entrapment. He lures Hevel out into the field, so he could kill him secretly. Now, this is sort of funny because there were literally two other people in the entire world, so it probably wasn't hard to find the private spot to do this. But he thinks he's hiding from God. I'm not sure. But he lures poor Hevel into the wilderness, if you will, or into the field, because he has thought in a cold-blooded way. He has planned out this murder in advance, and so this is not a crime of passion. Now, the truth is, the Torah doesn't make a distinction, by the way, between crimes of passion and premeditated murder. It's true that you need to, in order to be guilty of a capital crime, you have to have been warned. So it's almost really impossible to be guilty of a capital crime when it's a crime of passion, because chances are no one will see it, and you wouldn't have been warned. But nevertheless, technically speaking, the Torah does not make a distinction between those two types of killing. And that's what happened here. Ramban says that Cain thought about this, right? There would be some evidence, maybe, of some sort of plan that maybe he drew in the sand or something like that. The forensics team would be able to find and pin this murder on Cain, because he had thought about this and planned it in advance. Rav Yosef Bechor Shur takes a similar approach, but takes it to the extreme. He writes, what the Holy One blessed, he said to him, what the Holy One, blessed be He, had told him, what God had told him, Ba'alav ki hirgish shehaya nishmar mimenu. He approached him with guile, for he sensed that Hevel was protecting himself against Cain. Right? I mean, there already was some tension because one of the brothers had their offering accepted and the other brother did not have their offering accepted. So there's already tension between the brothers. And Hevel felt it. And he felt that Cain was angry with him and was maybe going to harm him. So what did Cain do? He lures him into a false sense of security. Va'amar lo kach v'kach, va'amar li. He said to him, so he said, this is what God said to me. And we made peace. V'amar li ha-kadosh baruch hu. With Paisenu Yachad, Ufa Upa Fanai Lohayuli Ode, and So he was no longer upset. His face wasn't on me like it was before. Ki amar, lama chara lecha, v'lama nafla panecha. Why are you so upset? Ufaiseini. And he appeased. V'chashav hevel shnit payes below nishmar menor. God, right? Kayan says, God made me feel better. I'm not upset anymore. I don't have to be annoyed that your carbon was accepted and my carbon was not accepted. And so when Kayan says all that to Hevel, Hevel says, oh, bygones. It's all over. Everything's fine. And then what happened? V'lo nishmar mimenu od. Hevel let his guard down. This is so awesome, right? The Ramban already said that Hevel thought about this in advance. But the Bechor Shor says, not only did he think about this in advance, we know what his plan was. His plan was, it's like, this feels like a mafia movie, right? When you're going to take some guy out into the forest to be shot, you tell him you're going, whatever, to a party or some event, right? And then they pull off the road and the guy knows he's done for. Because they lured him into a false sense of security. I think that's a sort of an ingenious read. And that also answers the question of what was said in the field. What was said in the field from Kayan to Hevel was, God told me I shouldn't be upset. God appeased me. Everything's okay. And then Hevel turns his back because he feels more comfortable. And whammo. That's the end of poor Hevel. So as we unpack that pasuk chet, that pasuk verse 8, we get, and we I sent out for a purpose, but the commentaries get more and more sinister, right, as to exactly what Hevel was going for. According to Rashi, it was pretext. According to Ramban, it was a premeditated murder. And according to Rav Yosef Bechor Shor, it was luring him into a false sense of security, basically lying to him so that he would let his let his guard down. All right, I'm going to stop here because I've said a bunch. And I want to give everyone else a chance if anyone has any comments or questions up until now. I see Josh is unmuted and Rabbi Gerson is unmuted. So, Josh?
Yeah, I was wondering if any of the commentators take a different view of Hevel, right? So Hevel doesn't have any agency in any of these interpretations of what went on, right? He brings a korban, Hashem accepts it, Cain is jealous. But I was thinking about the parallel with the Yosef story, right? Where Yosef is the favorite one and he rubs it in his brothers' faces and they get angry at him and jealous and then they do what they do. So does anybody try to understand that gap in the text differently? Maybe Hevel, you know, rubbed it in his brother's face. Maybe okay. He said something.
Baruch Shekivanta. This is exactly what's next. Rabbi Gerson, can you hold your comment for a minute?
Absolutely.
Okay, this is exact perfect segue. Josh and I did not practice this. The Dat Zikanim, Mibale HaTosfot, says the following. Vayomer Kayan El Hevel Achiv, Perush, Shesiper Lo Divrei Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kayan said to his brother Hevel, seeing that the Torah does not elaborate on the content of Kayan's words, we must assume that he told his brother about what God had said to him. Uma Asher Amar Lo, V'her'alo shecharalo heitev. He made it plain to his brother that he was very upset that God had not seen fit to accept his offering. And he had done as he had done with Hevel's offering. Hevel reacted to God having criticized Kayan with joy. It was perfect, Josh. Exactly like you said. Hevel's like, he rubbed his nose in it. Exactly like you said. When Kayan saw that his brother had been glad that he had been criticized by God, he arose with the intent of killing him. Right? This is, I talk about blame the victim, right? This is perfect, right? So it also, it answers a lot of the questions. By the way, so Kayan had no intention of killing Hevel. He was just so sad So he went on a walk with his brother to say, you're never going to believe this. I'm so sad. God didn't accept my carbon, but he told me I shouldn't be upset. And instead of being a supportive brother, Hevel rejoices in it. And that's it. At that point, Cain loses it and murders him. So very Joseph-like. And is that what you were looking for? Excellent. Great. That's a great point. Thank you for mentioning that just at the perfect time. Okay. Rabbi Gerson.
Can you just speak to what you mean by very Joseph-like? I'm intrigued by that.
Well, Josh, you mentioned it, so why don't you unpack your comment?
Oh, well, I had said that, you know, Yosef was, he was very full of himself, and he had, you know, these, I won't call them delusions of grandeur because of what happens in the, you know, in the Torah, but he was not a humble man, and he made sure that, you know, his brothers knew how great he was, and he provoked their jealousy and their anger. And so I was wondering if any of the, you know, commentators wondered similarly about Hevel, even though it's not in the pshat of the text.
Thanks for the clarification. what I was simply going to reflect on is that the Torah here seems to be planting for us the seeds of raw, unvarnished humanity left to its devices. And perhaps the later sections of Torah, beginning with Sefer Shemot, maybe even the end of the narrative in Bereishit, begin to attempt to counteract, both through narrative and legislation, the dangers that we see that are rife here at the beginning of the Torah. It's just a reflection.
Yeah, maybe. I agree. You know, I was reading something last night, which made me think about this. I'm reading a great, I'm reading a remarkable book now by Steven Pinker called The Better Angels of Our Nature. And the subtitle is Why Violence Has Declined. Like, he has the numbers, which indicate that it's true. It's just hard to think about that when you read the newspaper or look out the window. But, and the first chapter or the second chapter is dedicated to exactly what you just said. The fact that in, let's say, he's talking about hunter-gatherer, early planters, where there's no state, let's call it, murder rates are much, much higher than they are in what we would call a state system, regardless of what form of government. And it's amazing how they're able to do this. They go back and actually they could see how ancient people were killed if there was an arrowhead near the body, or they could tell how the bone was broken, whether it was broken while the body was alive or after the body was already dead. Were there other armaments around, like shields and swords, to indicate that the person probably died in some sort of battle? That's just a fascinating aspect of that type of research. But that's to your point. And so it could be, right, that you were in the class when we talked about Judaism and government. It could be ideal. Really, the Torah doesn't want a government. The Torah wants us to behave where we should be, but the Torah is also realistic and realizes that may not be entirely possible. So yeah, I think that's it could be the latter parts of the Torah. I think they call this intertextual commentary, right? The latter parts of the Torah acting as commentary on an earlier part of the Torah. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so up until now, we have been looking and thinking about the plain sense, the pshat, if you will, of the story. I want to pivot into the Midrashim. one particular midrash. It's a particular midrash which is fascinating and lends itself to a lot of interesting discussion. So the midrash is in Bereshit Rabbah, Chaf Bet Zayin, 22:7. And the midrash, before we do the midrash, maybe we'll do a little round robin here. The midrash gives three explanations, three reasons, as of what Cain and Hevel were actually arguing about. Okay, again, we're still trying to figure out in Pasuk Chet. Let's just go back at the Pasuk. A few people came in after we had seen it. In Pasuk Chet, it says, "Vayomer Cain el Hevel Achiv." Cain said to Hevel's brother, and they were in the field. So the Torah leaves out what Cain said to Hevel. By the way, I think in doing my research, I saw that there was one manuscript, maybe a Geniza manuscript, that actually had part of the conversation. But I don't think anyone assumes that that's part of the original text. Okay, so let's try to fill in the blank. We've gone through the pshat. Now we're going to do a little midrash. Anyone want to share? The midrash gives three things. You don't have to give three. Anyone want to venture a guess as to what Cain and Hevel, I'll spoil it a little bit, they were arguing about something, right? According to the Midrash, it wasn't just one said to the other, they were arguing. What were they arguing about? Remember, the world is just, it's brand new. Okay, Dina Boyd, welcome aboard. Nice to have you. What do you think?
If it's like, not to the same extent as my kids, but like there's always jealousy between kids and like dad likes you better or mom likes you better. So I wonder if it was something like because they had just given offerings to God that they are arguing about how God likes the other one better than the other one.
Okay. Jealousy. Good answer. So, okay. Anyone else?
They were having a dispute about their land.
They were having a dispute about their land.
And who's working harder on the land?
Okay, great. A fight about territory. Excellent. Okay, anyone else? Last call. All right, let's learn the midrash together. Vayomer Cain el Hevel Achiv, Vayhi Biotam Basadeh. Right, the Cain said to Hevel, we don't know what he said. They were in the field, and then Cain killed him. Al ma hayu midainim. What were they quarreling about? Here's the first one. Amru ba'u v'nachalku et ha'olam. They said, let's divide the world, right? Right? It's right now it's Adam and Chava. They're the parents. Cain and Hevel. And they say, well, it's just us. Let's divide the world. Echad natal hakarkaot, v'echad natal atamitatalin. One took the land and the other took the movables. Dein amar ara da'at kaim ala didi. The former said, the land that you're standing on is mine. Din amar Ma da'at levish didi, what you're wearing is mine. Dinamar chalotz, he said, take off your clothes. V'dinamar parach, and the other one who took the land said, well, get off the land. Mitoch kach, v'yakam Cain el hevel achiv v'yahargeh. This led to the fight, and Cain killed him. So like Brian said, they were fighting about land, about stuff, not that they land, they're fighting about stuff, about wealth. If you want to put it in like more modern terms, about wealth, about property, about territory and things, and that led to a fight. That's one opinion in the Midrash. Second opinion, Rabbi Yoshua Desichnin, B'Shem Rabbi Levi Amar, Shnehem Natlu Et HaKarkot, U'Shnehem Natlu Et HaMitalfin. No. They split. They each took some land, and they each took some movable. What were they fighting about? V'al mahayu medaynim, elaze omer b'tchumi beit hamikdash nivne, v'ze omer b'tchumi beit hamikdash nivne. No. They were fighting about where the Beit HaMikdash was going to be built. Shenemar v'ibitam basadeh. They were in the field. Ve'en sadeh ela Beit HaMikdash. Sadeh is a code word for Beit HaMikdash. Heich ma da'atmar sion sadeh techaresh. The Pasuk of Mikra that says that the land will be plowed over like a field. The land where the Beit HaMikdash was to be plowed over like a field. And then what happened? And Hevel arose, Cain arose and killed him. So how would you characterize this fight? This wasn't about land. This was about religion. Josh, were you going to say something?
Oh, I was going to say it was about kavod, it's about honor, right? Having the honor of having your land be where the Beit HaMikdash will be.
Okay. In this book by Pinker, he quotes the Leviathan and basically says there are three reasons why people kill each other, and one of them is honor. I actually never thought about it that way. Great, honor. So the first one is about stuff. The second one is about honor, or maybe about religion, which is a common cause for war even to this day. And number three, Amarabia Aivu, Chava Harishona Chazrala Afra, Ba'alma Haya Midainim. Chava had died. And what were they quarreling about? Amar Rabbi Huna, Tu'uma Yitera Nolda Im Hevel. Rabbi Huna said, when Hevel was born, he had a twin sister. Ze Omer Ani Notla, Sha'ani Bechor. Ze Omer Ani Notla, Sha'an Nolda Imi. Hevel said, Cain said, I'll take her because I'm older. And Hevel said, what are you talking about? I'll take her. She's my twin sister. And that's what led to the fight. So let's leave out the incest for a minute. We have to get past that because we're trying to think about this in conceptual terms. So how would you describe this fight? What are they fighting about?
Love.
Love. Women, love, sex, right? So this is really amazing. So let's understand what the rabbis are doing here. I don't think the rabbis are saying this is what they fought about. I think the rabbis are saying this is what people fight about. And we're going to read it back into the Midrash because, as Rabbi Gerson said, we're going to use this story as a lesson of how to avoid killing each other. We have to recognize that most of the time people kill each other over stuff, honor, or religion, and love. And if we could sort of realize that and see the pitfalls in front of us, maybe we could avoid it. Notwithstanding this try by Chazal, it was a fail, I guess, historically speaking, because these are still the things that people fight about. This is a point that Nechama Leibowitz made in her commentary. It is quite evident from the above citation that the Midrash gives the story of Cain and Hevel a universal application. It is concerned not merely with the individual case of Cain and Hevel, but with the motives underlying man's desire to quarrel, make war, kill, and murder his fellow. Professor Heinemann, in his work, Darkei Agadah, page 15, notes that our sages, in contradistinction to the scientific approach, do not generalize the concrete, but on the contrary, express abstractions in concrete terms. And so again, they're saying that they fought about the land, but they're really giving us a conceptual or an abstraction to think about. Three causes of bloodshed and murder. According to the first, they are prompted by economic considerations. better put than I did, money. The quarrel over material possessions. According to the second, bloodshed is prompted by religious and ideological reasons, each side maintaining that the temple should be built in his domain, that his religion should be accepted. That's a nice twist, right? It's about which religion is right. Although I think what you said, Josh, too, is also excellent. And the third view traces the roots of bloodshed and strife to sexual passion. They were disputing over Eve, or in this case, the sister. The Midrash is undoubtedly stating a universal truth. But does this emerge from the context? Admittedly, the rabbis were not concerned here with the individual kind in Hevel, right? There's no way to read that into the Pesukim, except the one word sadeh, that the Chazal gives some, I would call, vague connection to the Beit HaMikdash. But this is not pshat. This is classic Midrash, and a beautiful way to understand that when the rabbis did this, they were taking a specific event in the Torah and expanding it out to a more universal understanding. Since their aim was not explanatory, right, this is so interesting. The Chumaleh was saying, this Midrash is not meant to explain the Psukim. The Psukim are just a handy way for the rabbis to teach us their lesson. Right, to clarify the main sense of the passage, but rather to elicit a universal principle from it. They were not bound by the context in their search for an answer to the question, what were they arguing about? This is such a really important thing, because sometimes we read Midrash and we're like flummoxed and frustrated. How could they possibly have gotten this from the Pasuk? And the answer is they didn't. The Pasuk is like maybe a memory device as a way to remember the lesson. But the rabbis had things to teach, and the rabbis of the Midrash, instead of just getting up and saying it, they chose to couch it in the context of Psukim. Maybe it makes it easier to remember, as I said. We've seen the sort of pshat, and we've seen drash, midrash, on this as well. I just came across two other interesting things that sort of fit here. One from Jean-Jacques Rousseau, the first man who, after enclosing a piece of ground, took it into his head to say, "This is mine," and found people simple enough to believe him, was the true founder of civil society. How many crimes, how many wars, how many murders, how many misfortunes and horrors would that man have saved the human species, who, pulling up the stakes or filling up the ditches, should have cried to his fellows, "Be sure not to listen to this imposter. You are lost if you forget that the fruits of the earth belong equally to us all and the earth itself to nobody." So sort of like a socialist, maybe communist view, right? That everything belongs to, there is no private property. And that would have said, and there are, I've also seen comments where sort of communist readings that read this story as the root of all evil because they were fighting over land. And then this last piece from the Netziv actually discusses religious fighting over religion. We don't have to read that right now. So back to the beginning. It did not take very long once human history began for there to be a murder, for murder to become something that was then bragged about by Lemech. And we saw the sinister development of Hevel, to the point where he tricked his brother into letting his guard down. Josh reminded us that maybe it was all Hevel's fault, and maybe it's a good idea to blame the victim. I was going to say it anyway, so we'll get Josh off the hook. But that's what this comment does, right? The Datsa Kanan sort of says, Hevel rubbed Tom's nose in the fact that his karban was rejected, which led Hevel to kill him. And then finally, the three rabbinic views sort of rounding out our discussion and showing how Chazal used this murder as a cautionary tale, if you will, to try to avoid violence in general, hopefully recognizing what normally leads to it. So that is the story of the invention of murder in the Torah. And before we say goodnight, I will welcome any comments or questions that anyone has before we end. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining. It was a pleasure to study with you and to learn with you. Next week, we are on at the same same time, same channel. And just as a quick reminder of what we're talking about next week is going to be Moshe in Egypt. Moshe's the murders of Moshe by Moshe in Egypt. And then the week after that is about religious conflict, which we touched on today. So hope to see you again. For those of you who are going to be at TDK this Shabbat, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom. I will not be here. I wish Shabbat. So I will see you next week, if not before. Have a wonderful evening, everyone. It was great to be together with you, as always. And may we hear good news from Israel soon, the return of all the hostages and the ending of the war, and peace for Am Yisrael and all the inhabitants of that region and indeed the world. All right. Have a
Amen.
Wonderful night, everybody.
Thank you. Amen. Thank you, Rabbi.
Shakara.
Alicia,
I'm back. Rabbi, can I ask, can you stay on? I'll ask you. So you're saying Cain and Abel were brothers, correct? Or
yes, they were.
And Eve was?
Their mother.
Their mother?
Yes.
Who was their father?
Adam?
Well, why wasn't Cain? So Cain was Adam's brother? Wait a minute, I'm getting really confused.
Adam and Eve had, at this point, two sons. Cain and Abel.
I'm getting Adam and the names Abel. Okay. Sorry. Thank you.
No worries. No, of course.
Thank you.
All right. Good night, everyone. Thank you again for joining.
Good night.
Laila Tov. Shalom.
Laila Tov.
Laila Tov.